and welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton, and with me today is John.
Hi.
And Duncan.
Hey there.
I don't know why I reversed the order. I got scared.
Me too.
Well,
poor John. Poor sweet, sweet John.
Yeah. I always feel bad when I catch you off guard with introductions. You never seem happy about it. Well, speaking of order? I don't know. Speaking of order, this is the order of the anime that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Run With The Wind, then we're going to talk about Gridman, and then if Duncan feels like it, we'll talk about Bloom Into You. But to start with, Run With The Wind is good and has gotten a lot better, like, since we started watching it. You were the one who really came on the Slack and said that Run With The Wind is anime of the year, so let's hear your thoughts, John.
Now I'm scared and
it's just because you emphasize so strongly with Prince, John. I think
Prince is the best, and he fucking owns the last couple episodes. I feel like he's been the star of the show, like not Kakeru or even Haiji. He's so fucking good. Like, I want to be him in real life.
I mean, I think you already are.
But I'm not, because I don't actually do it, you know?
Oh, he really did have a great couple of episodes. I just loved the scene where he's actually decided to give a go, and he sort of ties his little fringe back and puts his hair in a bow, and it's just like, oh!
Well, it's funny, because it's what they usually do for, like, studying, where you like, pin your bangs back and tie your, like, sides back, and everyone's just like, oh, like, I guess he just always looked at the ground because he had these like long bangs he had to look under. But then they trained him with like holding the manga out and like holding manga in his arms to the right.
The funniest way to get somebody to run correctly, because he's like flailing around like a weird, puppet. And it's then
like
suddenly.
As you say, it's like a zombie or a Pinocchio just flapping his arms and just. It's almost like, as you say, puppet's a really good one, because when you see him running originally, it's almost like he's carried forward by his shoulders, like all his weight's on his shoulders rather than like how a normal person is, and he's just like half collapsed forward and he's being just held upright by these invisible strings, his arms are flailing everywhere.
Dragging his
legs. Well, they
point out
that his arms are held weird because he's like still in reading position where he doesn't move his arms.
It's really funny.
I've always liked Prince because I think he's really funny, but I really enjoyed how Kakeru having a breakthrough in episode 9 is what allows Prince to have a breakthrough. And so usually a lot in sports animes, people are like, oh, it's part of the team, you gotta work together. But in this, like, Haiji's right. Like, Kakeru not being a team player is literally holding other people's development back.
Yeah.
And once Kakeru, like, the moment where he's actually watching the track meet, because Haji's told him that you can't, like, I'm not letting you run, like, you need to watch the rest of the team run and kind of like find where your head's at. And he's watching, and it's a really great scene where he's watching and it's like slows down and zooms in until he's just like watching faces and beads of sweat fall off as the kind of sound dies out, and then he just like has a click and he starts cheering.
It's such a good
He's like, oh, no, it's about the people. Like, who cares if you can run fast?
One of my favorite things, too, is that, like, when he has that breakthrough with Prince, like, I think it's Niko-chan Senpai asks Haiji. Somebody asks Haiji, like, you planned this all along, right? And he's like, no, this is just a really happy accident. It's like, it's fucking great.
Cause it is Niko-chan, because he's like, this is what you thought what you'd do. And he's like, no, I was planning to, like, say something in a bit if Prince didn't start improving, but this is good that it happened.
Yeah, which is like the opposite of what would normally happen in one of these like sports anime, where they just you'd have this like genius fucking manager who knows everything that's gonna happen, and they just like steer everybody into these fucking conflicts where they break through, and it's just like, oh man, this is really good. It feels so much more natural like this. I love it.
I love that the sort of accompanying beat to that is Haiji collapsing from overwork. And it's like,
and then we get the very typical girl can't cook thing with Hana coming in, which I laugh at every time.
So
I don't
funny.
Care if it's a bit misogynist and dumb, but like it's just funny when it's just like, oh, cute girl that's like so like homey, and then she's like, oh, everyone says they love my food, here it is. It's just how anime always does like the waving purple lines, and everyone's like barfing and vomiting.
She has a line like, My dad, all my family loves it. Whenever I cook for my dad, he cries.
And then after Haishi gets better, he's like, you guys let Hannah cook, didn't you?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, she brought her own supplies. Oh, no, yeah, like Haishi, I was briefly really annoyed because like how it's foreshadows at the track meet. Haishi's like watching on his watch because he times all the different runners, and there's like a brief like blur, and I'm like, oh no, does he have like anime cancer?
Yeah, I know, I was really worried about that too, but yeah. I'm glad it was just overworked because again, it felt natural because he was definitely doing a lot of shit.
Well, yeah, because when after he collapses, they're like, does Haishi ever sleep? Yeah. And the twins are like, oh, we just assumed he was fine without sleep. It's like, twins are the worst.
Yeah, they are really the worst people.
They are. It's like, that was well handled as well. Just even though it was just one beat in it, it's like, as someone who's always had trouble with sleep, like, I sort of remember being in class when I was studying in particular and just being completely sleep deprived but having to pay attention, just feeling your head just like go.
I've had that happen too.
Or just like the fuzz and blur, like suddenly you're looking through Vaseline or but no, it's really good because one of the things I really appreciate about Run with the Wind is that important things happen and the show doesn't spend an entire episode on them, which is like, as opposed to like, say, that time I was reincarnated as a slime, which has also improved, except it ruined its characters by turning a bunch of cool ogres into like dumb bishy boys and women.
I kind
of
like that. But, I mean, I know why you don't like it, but I also kind of like it.
You took more intricate character designs and made them less intricate. It's like I had a moment where I'm like, oh, this is what people who get mad about Moe must be like, where I'm just like...
I just like the gag, I guess. But long term, yeah, I guess I can see why.
I did too. Well, especially when he meets the guy at the end who's just looks like a middle aged guy. He's like, thank my God, favorite. It's a middle aged guy.
It's like just like me.
But it's very appropriate that we had this long digression when I'm talking about how Run with the Wind doesn't like waste time. Like big things happen and people react to them and then they move on and there's very little like backtracking to revisit the emotional beats there. Yeah. Like Kakeru has a moment where he realizes that like, no, like it's not about me running. It's about us running, everyone running. And like, it's as exciting to watch someone run as it is to run yourself. Mm-hmm. And then he's there cheering with the rest of them while Prince is behind him, just like mumbling them. Haishi passes. I'm like, oh, he's going to be out for like an episode or two, but he's up before the episode's over.
Yeah.
Granted, against doctor's orders, but
I really like how the show trusts you to keep up without having to remind you of everything that happened, which is something anime often struggles to do because they just like everything has to be spelled out very explicitly for you. I don't know. That's really all I got there.
Well, we're coming up to the festive season. Don't rule out a recap episode yet. It's got another arc to do.
Yeah, so. It has a whole other core. I don't know what the fuck's gonna happen.
I keep saying this, but I'm so happy to watch a two core anime and just be like, they can have some bad episodes because they've got 23 of them, and the fact that they haven't like there were a couple like I think around like. Three or four, there was one that like just not much happened, but they haven't had a bad episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if they clear out this core with like no slumps, sure they can fuck it up for four or five episodes, and I'll still call this one of the best shows I watched this year. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised because it's super a sports anime, but it's really into like the psychology of failure and why people and like regret and why people compete and like. Kakeru's not very self-aware, but is getting gradually more self-aware as the show goes on, and it allows us to get deeper insights into the characters around him. And just the fact that, like how Kakeru realized that he wasn't interacting with Prince, he just was treating him as a burden. And so he comes in and, like, asks us, like, hey, can you lend me some manga? And then it's just them sitting together with a manga reading. And then the payoff is in the race where Prince is struggling to break... 30 minutes, and Kakeru blows like a record-setting run to like run behind Prince and like get him to improve his form to get his form back into shape. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah,
and it's just like that's something that Kakeru never would have done three episodes ago, and it feels like really earned growth to see him to see him do that. So
and it was and it's like they pack so much into everything they get out. Like when he's telling Prince to look up, because Prince has obviously on his final lap he's exhausted and his head's gone down and he's reverting to what he's been doing for the rest of the time. He comes and he's
the Frankenstein lurch sort of thing.
It's like look up, and the thing to which was like striking to me is that that's also what he's done to himself. Like what he's the transformation he's done in Prince has made get him to sort of look up and see what's around him and just take notice of what of other people and other things. And like that's exactly what's happened to him. And it's like this look up, it's like both like statement of what he's done and what Prince has achieved. And it's like, yes, you've done that really well, series. Top star.
I when they were cheering, like throwing Prince in the air, I was like, I wouldn't be that mad if the show ended here, but no, we've got 13 more episodes. That's exciting. It's nice.
They're such good boys.
No, bad. Fired.
But they are. Well, they're the best.
Speaking of good boys, do you want to move on to SSSS Gridman?
There's no good boys there.
There's.
He's pretty good. Utah?
Not Utsumi, not Sho, fuck him. I keep getting wary because I keep talking to people about the show where I'm really gung-ho and they're like, yeah, it's pretty good. And like I think it makes me worry. I'm beginning to like kind of second guess, even gaslight myself about like how much is just constant visual references to Eva enough to like make me like an anime. But no, especially the past two episodes that have just been all about Akane's psychology as like a god or a dreamer dreaming a dream or whatever she is. Like, yeah, I know.
You have I disagree with this. Well, let's get into it. You do your bit, and then I'll respond to what...
The last couple episodes were... they had kind of a weird fake-out where... It was a different version of the town, and basically it was just a series of Akane being dating Yuta and being best friends with Sho and Rika, and it gradually becomes clear that she's like trapped them in this dream, and they all eventually reject it because it's not natural, and that kind of Shinji like reaffirms or even almost more like Asuka like reaffirms to Akane that something's wrong with her, that these people can't care about her. And we've had super Eva notes in her character since then where she's just kind of wandering around dead inside and not really even making monsters and not really interacting with anybody. And she finally does make a monster and it looks weak, but turns out to be super strong. And I don't know where the plot is going per se, but I'm really enjoying like the glimpse into someone who's like the kaiju are the losers. That's how it works. Ultraman beats the kaiju. The Evangelion, even in Evangelion, the Evas beat the angels. And it's actually the mass production Evas that bring them down at the end of the day. Like the role of a maker of kaijus is the mother of losers. And the whole thing where we like know that she's actually a huge fan of kaiju, and so she's just kind of trapped in this mindset where she can't be happy, and she's trying to like force people to be happy to her, but it doesn't work, so they end up with nothing. God can't be one of us is, I guess, the upshot, at least for me.
Let's just go back to the beginning of the
sure. Let's walk it through.
So, did you read any significance into Akane giving him her watch?
I thought it was meant to be like a surrogate to his Gridman gauntlet. It was kind of supposed to be a pairing there.
So if he's Gridman because he's wearing a watch, what would it mean if she had a watch and she's giving it to him?
I hate being talked down to. You should just say what you mean.
So I think that it means that she used to be Gridman, essentially.
That is interesting, because at the very last thing that she says before the sudden reveal of the last episode is that she wanted to talk to Gridman.
Yeah, and there's a line the line before that is, "Do you remember every last thing you threw away?"
Yeah,
I'm fairly certain she was the previous Gridman pilot or whatever you would describe that role as. And like I've said to you, you said to me, you felt like she was the Haruhi character, the as you say, the god up in heaven, making all right with the world. Well,
I can't believe they referenced that like explicitly, having show doodled that in his notes. Yeah. I was just like, are you here? Are you watching me? Is there like a webcam on somewhere? Oh.
But yeah, it's like I feel she's far closer to Shinji than she is to Harumi. That she's basically fucked everything up, and she's been, what's left over is just her and probably the people she was fighting, just keeping her around for some reason. Maybe because destroying her would cause some bigger problem than keeping her around, but who knows exactly. But I get the sense that she failed for some reason, and this whole rebuild of her world is her just repeating the same mistake time and time again without learning from it. And I mean
that's the thing, is though, even though I said that it's really good at like giving us a picture of Akane's psyche, I don't really know what she's thinking. She's clearly extremely lonely and extremely depressed, which is, that's one emotional dynamic that I think is different than and interesting in spite of not being derived from Evangelion, is the fact that she is like, she made herself the most popular girl in the school and she's still brutally lonely because the guy she created to be her boyfriend and the guy she created to be her side piece and the girl she created to be her best friend are like actively her enemies. And I'm not as interested in prognosticating as you are, but I do think it's stunning that like a kind of just like Ultraman Eva giant robot remix actually does have these like impactful characters in a way that a lot of shows have tried post Eva to arrogate that sort of thing to them.
I will say, so, I do think the last two episodes have been the ones I've enjoyed the most out of the series, like the ones which have been the most crunchy, which I can get my teeth into.
I haven't watched the latest one, but, and also I don't read into things the way that you two do. So what I'm about to say probably makes no sense, but it might make some sense. But it feels like there's a lot in this show that makes you think that it could just all be within Akane's head, or, and like these other people are sort of her conscience trying to set her to the right direction. But then there's also that little kaiju girl who explicitly says that she was there before Akane did anything, which makes me think that it's not all in her head. Like I said, I haven't seen the latest episode, so I don't know if that leans into anything.
I was
going
to say,
those
two don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Maybe, but also no.
But it's like I'd actually sort of feel like the way I see her as a god is that she's just been dropped into this space with these beings to look after her needs, and they've basically created this town out of her. Psychosis is the wrong word, but out of her mental trauma.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean there. It's just like, I guess the reason that if what I am thinking ends up being a thing, then would she, it doesn't really make sense to me that she would also have been Gridman, if that makes sense. I don't know.
I need to see the links, Duncan, I think. I love your reading, but my honest reaction is that she is just trying to replace Gridman with some shitty piece of trash she found, and that's why she gives him the watch. But I do think that like that there is, because there, the implication is that what's his name, Hibiki, Potato-kun doesn't have his memories for some reason connected with the artificial nature of the town, and so I'm wondering. And there's the weird thing that hasn't really been touched on previously, where Rika's like, if you're lying to me about not having your memories, like, I'm going to be really, really pissed at you. And it implied that he doesn't remember something that's important to her. And so I'm looking forward to slash dreading kind of a lot of different reveals, a reveal of what is like, what is the level of control that that Akane has over the space. Who is Alexis
Alexis Krabus or whatever?
Well, yeah.
I think it's
Karib. What are Yuta's lost memories, and who is Gridman? But I mean, they can answer two out of the four, and it would still be fine by me. But there are questions there, and like I think that the need for media to answer every single question would. Is bad and would ruin this. 100% if, like, agree we know.
With that. Is this another two core or series?
No, okay. No, sadly, it's only 12. Okay, so God, if it was two core, I would be losing my mind. You would commit me to the asylum. Two core with this much plot advanced on episode 10. I'd be screaming in the streets.
after the F word, that this being only 12 episodes is a relief. But just to go back on Hibiki?
Hibiki, Yuta.
On Hibiki's lack of memories. Well, if she's produced him to be her replacement, to be the new Gridman or whatever, then the reason he doesn't have memories is the person who essentially... He's her. She has his memories. That's why he doesn't remember anything.
Well, if that's the case, why would Rika also not be lacking in memory? You know what I mean?
Because they were created to be her friends with memories of their lives and their families, but all he's created to be is to be her replacement, to take all this horrible stress and worry she has, and to do the things she wasn't able to do. But
by her?
I love you, Duncan, but I think you're Jeffing it up here.
I'm not sure. Like,
I've gone full Jeff.
I mean, I would love that sort of thing, but I mean, I don't know, because there are some lines that imply that she's like one of many gods, or that she was kicked out of heaven, or that there's an implication that she's dreaming and this is her dream, and like I'm trepidatious about like knowing what the nature of Akane is, because I think she's got a very interesting portrayal as just like a lonely person, and I don't want her to secretly be like a race of aliens or something. I want to know more about her, not about like about who she is, not what she is, if that makes sense.
I honestly I said this early on, but I think Akane is the only human in the whole thing, so
yeah.
But
I just
it was really funny. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, I just remember there's a fucking city in the sky. Did they do anything with that yet in the latest episode?
It's revealed, so to speak. I did like when Rika like did the like, yeah, we're all created by Akane, and Sho just went through like, that can't be true. I visited Kyoto, and she's like, fake memories. And he's like, I have relatives in Saitama, and she's like, fake memories. and he's like, we went to this. And he's like, fake memories.
Nice.
He's like, dang, I guess. Yeah, it was.
And I like he actually has like this crisis over that. And
he kind of breaks down because of it. Yeah.
Like he has a proper existential crisis. Does anything matter if we're these creations of this mad god, and worse than that, she hates us and wants to get rid of us. And
well, it's also the interesting sort of thing where she's convinced that like by the art of subtraction she'll make the perfect world. If she just keeps deleting all the bad things, then all she'll be left with is the good things, which is a very Shinji like mentality of like, if you get rid of all the pain, what's left is a world of happiness and not a totally empty world, like it's rapidly been revealed that the city is. Yeah, I feel blessed. Hashtag blessed that I have run with the wind and Gridman, and that I'll let you guys talk me into it. I hate taking recommendations for stuff, so
I mean
it's very rare.
I think the two of them actually are a good complement to each other, because one's just like holy labyrinthian mess of grabs from Eva and Gridman meshed together.
It has references to fucking everything that involves giant robots, literally.
Yeah, you know, there's so many. I bet. I wish I knew more about like Macross so I could pick up those. I'm sure there's like Macross refs and stuff.
So it was like, I mean, there was a scene in the I think it was the most recent episode where he just starts running along the side of some buildings, and that was just, oh, that's that scene from EVA 2.2 where they bring up the towers from Tokyo 2 so the EVA can run along it. And I'm like, Jesus H. Christ, stop grinning so bad. But okay, I actually kind of like it in this context.
I mean, I would I'm feel very annoyed if it only referenced one thing, but the fact that it references fucking everything is what makes it more tolerable to me. Although, on the other hand, I don't really recognize most of them because I'm bad at that sort of thing, but you know.
Well, I mean, there's the, I think I posted in the show notes of our last episode, the, like, EVA Geeks, like, list of all visual references to EVA, and Gridman is going to have a massive listing, because, like, when Yuta wakes up in the dream world, he's, like, it's literally the, like, unfamiliar ceiling from the second episode of Evangelion, and that episode also has a lot of flashing train lights and power lines, which is,
there was one shot where I could have been wrong, but I swear that they were framing Akane like the white ray, her head in a similar pose to when she's gone and ascended at the in end of the original. I could have been completely wrong, but it's the sort of thing it would do.
You should start to see it everywhere because you're like, maybe everything's an EVA visual reference. I don't know.
I mean, it could be with this. It really could be.
That character said Dame. Is that a quote? Is that Asuka quote? Who knows? Yeah. Oh. And I also have to, like, before we move on, I have to really give a shout out to Akane's voice actress, Ueda Reina. Has done nothing. She's done a lot of, like, minor roles. I think the best chance, she's a from Kekkai Senshin. She's Neika. Is that a familiar character to you, John? Neyka.
I don't remember.
She's like a lady in like a in like oh she's the Patrick's assistant. She's just had a bunch of small roles. Like she was the main character in Caligula, but she was Lily in Net Junkie. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
if that means anything. But like she hasn't had any big roles, but she like the level of like pathos and subtlety that she has in all of her deliveries, especially in the past few episodes, have been really excellent. And to have a relatively small-time voice actress really fucking kill it like this is really good. Oh, she was Hometown Girl in Sakura Quest, John. That's how you know her.
Oh, okay.
Hometown Girl.
A thankless role. The one who hated people, like, not wanting to, like, love their small-town hometown. But no, she's killing it, and I hope she does more things because Akane seems like a really meaty role, and she's got her teeth like deep in it. So,
is it worth very quickly discussing the last moments of the final of the recent episode, or will that be a bad spoiler for John?
I'm worried they're going to roll it back anyway, so let's leave it until our post wrap up. Extreme shit happens, basically.
And even the extreme, and the daft thing is, I'm convinced, and we maybe are able to track it, I'm convinced that even the extreme shit that happens is cribbing it from somewhere else. I'm sure I've seen it shot for shot somewhere else. So,
what I want it to be the distant future where I can just, like, capture, like, a series of images, and then the computer will tell me, like, oh, this was taken from an Infinite Stratos or something. And
someone's going to put together a cobbled together version of this with just everything out of EVA.
It's like when they make the Star Wars movies and it's just like 30-second clips from different people.
Yeah.
Each making 30 seconds. Yeah, they could do that. It'd be a massive pain in the ass, but it'd be fucking hilarious to see.
Yeah. I linked a list of a bunch of Transformers references, and that's just from, like, I guess they posted October 13th, so that's very early on in the series, and I know that they've continued to make more and more and more. I'm curious how many other, like, giant robot references, like, shows they reference to this degree, because it's insane.
It's like, even just in the latest episode, it suddenly dawned on me, oh, Auntie's kaiju form has, like, roughly the same colors as EVA Unit 1. And then what actually bloody happens? It turns out.
Oh, yeah. I wish we had Jeff here to talk about the revelation with Auntie, because I feel that's something he would like a lot. One last thing is what actually the Akane situation a little bit reminded me of is there's a radio / like CD drama for Evangelion called Evangelion After the End, which is kind of a joke where EVA got so popular they got an emergency extra core and they had to figure out how to like roll back the ending and keep going. And what they originally come up with is like, well, the leader of the angels will come and he'll explain the plan and what he wants to do to Earth. And I was thinking that this is kind of like making that joke text where like, we do get to talk to the people who made the person who made all the angels. And it turns out that she's really depressed and lonely and she's trying to fix things by killing people with with massive angels.
From what I understand, the original Gridman had someone making the bad guys as well.
Interesting.
And so that's something they've took directly from it, but they've, instead of it, from, I've only read a small catch, but basically the setup in the original Gridman is it's all fought in a virtual world, and it's someone at home making these monsters and sort of uploading them, and there's no one gets killed or hurt because it's all taking place in this virtual world. And
the toy manufacturers must have loved that.
Yeah. And so he makes all these kaiju to fight over daft things and take out his daft grudges and like, oh, I'm going to destroy them because they ruined this series and all that.
Oh, speaking of taking out for grudges, like Akane's like absolute panic when the girl that she deleted in the first episode came back was amazing. Uh-huh. Which is like her nightmare is like someone who she doesn't want to see anymore having to see them. Was the thing. I think it's like Hankune or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was just like she like literally froze up and had a panic attack because like the girl from the volleyball team who she deleted from existence is back. Mm-hmm. And then she woke up.
Yeah, I mean, there was even more texture to it than that. I felt like it was like not just like, it was like, if you're back, what does that mean about me?
Yeah, what's happening? I'm not a god.
Yeah.
So we're seeing less of Flu Mask Girl, and I disapprove of that. Flu Mask Girl is great. Haas is great, and
This is the time of year where I wish Flu Mask were a thing in the West, because dear God, people on public transport, fucking hell, learn to cover your mouths.
I mostly just associate it with being like a punk, because like the what I saw it a lot in was working, where like the manager's old outfit was like a floor-length skirt, a nail bat, and a flu mask with glutton written on it in Japanese characters.
Yeah, it's a pretty common thing. I also recently thought about wearing a flu mask because it would have helped me with my allergies, but I didn't. So maybe she's just like me and just had this sudden onset of intense allergy attacks that you've never had before in your life. And Don't judge.
No, I mean, apparently it's because she considers herself like a YouTube idol, and so she's like hiding her identity by covering her face.
Which is pretty funny.
Which is funny, yeah. I mean, I kind of wish this was too core, but I also like the economy and density of it. So it's the biggest monkey's paw in the world to wish that an anime ran for longer than it does, because that finger curls and suddenly you've got like two different beach episodes, and you've got the episode where like someone goes home and doesn't come back for five episodes. Ugh.
And then, yeah, basically, then you have Franks. That's the long and short of it.
That's not fair. Franks' problems do not necessarily come from its length.
Also, it was
they also come from its one. From its like abject lack of creative vision.
If you had only like 13 episodes from that, they would have had to cut out a lot of their bullshit, and so it would have been leaner.
No, because the last four episodes are like an entire Coors worth of events, and they just cram it all in there, and it's terrible.
Yeah,
we go from time skip to like Space Bride in three episodes. It's terrible. Let's not talk about Franks again.
Yeah, oh, no. It's just an example of someone having too much money and too much time and not enough supervision and just producing a bloated mess.
I'm really surprised at how good this is. I was ready to honestly say that like Trigger just can't handle original properties anymore. But
I mean, you know, even up until like two episodes back, I've still don't like a lot about it, but I think the last two episodes have been very good. And
right, it's really nice to have promise seeded in the first few episodes, and then they pay off that promise with character development.
So this is absolutely meaningless, and I'm turning into Jeff here, but apparently the Transformers references that are the most prevalent are from a toy line called Shattered Glass, which kind of, you know, shattering the mirror.
Just doesn't mean anything.
Well, she's shattering the glass of reality to get her back into, I don't know, man. I just thought it was funny. Leave me alone.
You know, I'm sure there's a scene in the PV where he saw Gridman appears behind a video, not a video, behind Akane in the window and the glass shatters. So there you go.
Yeah, that was actually a cool thing when like Gridman just kept appearing on surfaces in the dream. Yeah. And when he tried to like look at the billboard that had Gridman on it, it was like too bright. And then when the sun cleared off, like it was just a regular billboard and then Akane's right behind him suddenly. Ugh, the show, it's got very good art direction, if nothing else. Even if it like completely Franks is out in the last two episodes, it's still got a really strong art direction. And I love Akane and her little stick legs and her big boobs. It's good. It's different. It's not playing to a type. She just, in her like weird, she's always wearing that hoodie that's kind of like off her shoulders. And I want to be like, I'm gesturing to pull a hoodie back onto someone's shoulders.
Akane drives me nuts. I don't know why. I hate it so much that she won't fucking pull it up over her shoulders.
Yeah, zip up your hoodie, girl. Get a smaller hoodie and then zip that hoodie up. Well, speaking of, I can't even do a transition here. Duncan, how about Bloom Into You, which I complained before the podcast I've confused with Iridoku, The World in Color, and Boarding School Romeo and Juliet, which you got kind of mad about.
Yeah.
Justifiably.
I mean, like, you're mixing up a high school romance, a high school romance, and a high school romance. God damn it, Ben.
Everything's the same anime. There's only one anime. We just keep watching it over and over. All of them
have equal lack of interest to John.
So, re-pitch Bloom Into Color to me. Like, what's the premise? Where's it gone?
Okay, so what makes Bloom Into You interesting is that you have a high school romance where the protagonist doesn't care about romance. And where romance is used not as the central overwhelming thing, but as a sort of instigation device into the psychologies, traumas, everyday lives of the rest of her class, her friends. And yeah, as I say, it's surprisingly good. It's like I started watching it just because it is very shiny and pretty, as high school romances occasionally can be. It has I think I've described it as a, like a perpetual sunset. Everything's bathed in this sort of dappled orange color, and everyone's like softly lit and perfectly drawn with sort of gem eyes, etc. And it's very, very pretty. But
I love the like shoujo jose art style, like, which all this is actually a shonen manga, but like the sort of intricate, beautiful sort of way that they draw like people in like kind of romance focused manga. So
and it's I think the thing is over time it's gone from just starting just like this is a normal romance, girl meets other girl who crushes on her badly, but from there it diverges in that she isn't interested in the romance, but is lonely, wants a friend badly, but doesn't want the romantic connection. And like that, even just as an adult, that's a really difficult relationship to navigate between two people, like one person being romantically interested in another person who's not romantically interested. And the idea that not only is that this is how she feels, is that this is her genuine thing. It's not necessarily something which is going to change about her. It's that she's not at the time where romance holds an interest to her. She wants friends. She wants to have people who make her feel part of a group and understand herself better, but doesn't necessarily ready to be... She can't commit herself to someone because she can't imagine that. It's interesting that that's not the way high school romances normally are.
I was thinking that reading the plot synopsis that like it's so at least in my experience it was so easy to get crushes on people in like junior high and high school, and so someone who just can't or doesn't have the interest in those connections is a really interesting place to start from.
Mm-hmm. And they build on it more by what happens when you don't have romantic interest in someone, but you build a very strong just connection with them anyway, just like an emotional connection where you want them to be happy. And yet how do you navigate that when you want them to be happy and the way they want to be happy is to be with you, but you don't want to be with them? And then, and it, I've heard it compared a little bit to our old favourite Scum's Wish, in that you have a cast who all have their traumas and their unhealthy relationships with each other. But it's decidedly less raunchy than Scum's Wish was.
All anime is like less sexual than Scum's Wish.
Most anime is less raunchy than Scum's Wish. But it
in a certain way. I mean, if we're talking about looking at girls' panties, then actually it's a very low bar.
Yeah, but that's true. But it's also got a really strong directorial voice. Like, there's one.
Do you know who's directing it?
I'm not like you. You go search, Ben. Run, find, hunt him down.
He's done. He did Yagate Kimi ni Naru. Oh, that's Bloomin' to You. He did Beautiful Bones, Sakurako's Investigation, known as A Corpse is Buried Under Sakakaro's Feet.
Boring show. I tried to watch it, because, chill detective with quirk is kind of my jam, but it was not good.
He's done virtually nothing. Storyboarding and episode directing on Batum, in-betweening and Hitman Reborn, assistant director on Recreators, episode director of some of the later Servant Service episodes.
He seems just to have a lot of confidence, because, like, there's perhaps my favorite shot of the season has been like one which happened in one of the early episodes where he does this reverse shot. So, you know, when you have a camera shooting on one person, then cuts back to facing another person. And the way he did it is he had them at a crossing and having the one girl confess to the other and punctuating her words with the train passing. So in one direction, as she sort of says the beginning of it, you get the train passing and then it cuts. And then you sort of hear the after the wind as something's passed, just so it's like thunder as the confession's made. Sound of the wind going past, and as it cuts to the other person's reaction, and it's just a amazingly well choreographed shot for me. It's one of the best confession scenes I've seen for a long time, where you actually sort of get a sense of the weight of those words on someone who doesn't necessarily want them. And not only that, is that having done that shot, 8 episodes later, the director makes a direct call back to it by mimicking it almost exactly in a slightly different situation, where it's been set up that the main love interest has like a dead sister who was like the perfect student who she's been trying to live up to, and it's clearly unhealthy and she's clearly burdened by these unrealistic expectations. And that's the main protagonist who she has a crush on, has seen this in her life and has seen how unhealthy it is, and her main obsession has been, if I can just perform the school show that my older sister was going to before she sadly passed away, then I can sort of finally fulfill her legacy. And Yu sees how unhealthy that is, how bad it is for her, and she you have this scene where she's like, you need to stop, this is hurting you, you can't just spend your time trying to be your sister. Stop for me. Stop. And her friend, who's spent most of the series telling her how she's fallen in love with her and all that, turns around and says, "I would rather die." And it's just like, out of absolute nowhere, just clocks the other person. not literally, but metaphorically. And it was just like, that came from nowhere. I was not expecting that in the slightest, but yet it felt completely in character, which is like, to me, like one of the strongest things you can say about a piece of dialogue, that you never saw it coming, but when you do, you always knew it was there. And yeah, it's just been a surprisingly strong and emotionally hard-hitting series. Yeah, good stuff.
No, it's good to hear. I wrote this off when you first talked about it, but now that I'm actually like trying to like look up information to ask you more piercing questions, it does seem interesting. Do you think it's going to have like a real payoff at the end of its 13 episodes?
So, I mean, they're clearly going towards the... Like, the finale is going to be they're going to hold the show because she obviously wasn't able to persuade her to stop. And so she's going to go up on stage. She's finally going to live up to her dead sister's legacy. And then something's going to happen one way or another.
Mm.
There will be, I think it's going to conclude. How satisfying that conclusion will feel, I don't know. The last couple of episodes, there's been a suggestion that you're starting to feel things towards her romantically as well, that her previous apathy's changed and that she's maybe starting to develop feelings as well, but how genuine those feelings are and how much their codependency isn't being made entirely clear, and that the characters seem to be aware of that being a problem, and that's interesting. The final thing to say is it's notable for having a example of a well-adjusted, happy adult lesbian relationship introduced in one episode of her, one of their teachers dating another woman, and then seeing them having a happy social life, and that basically spelling out this doesn't have to be a phase in to people who feel this way, that... One of the things the genre does of girl-on-girl romance in Japanese literature is that they tend to make it seem as like something which will be forgotten and left behind as they transition into adulthood. But this show seems to actually treat it with far more respect than that. And that's that.
Cool. That was the best pitch you possibly could have made me on this. I don't think it will be won over since I've already compromised my morals once with Grindman. But
this is the season, Ben. The season when to give
it. Six shows is too much for me, and I'm actually getting tired keeping up with Golden Kamuy and Slime and fucking Index, which is we're not allowed to talk about.
That's why you can marathon this over Christmas. Planted that idea now.
Well, I go take a power nap after having to entertain the thought of that. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back for spotlight pitches to John, who was the winner of our last spotlight competition. I was also excited. I was looking down the list of the people, and apparently my Nakahara is like some teacher in Bloom into You, and I was gonna bring that up, and I was like, no, this is the worst example of how you are, Ben, and being like, this minor character has a voice actress who is very talented.
Who are they?
Now we're doing it. Great. My Nakahara plays Riko Hakozaki, the literature teacher and the student council advisor.
So that's the gay teacher who has a relationship with another woman.
Oh, really? She's great. She's got a long history. She's been acting since the beginning of the 2000s. But yeah, she tends to play kind of like Genki girls with hidden sadness. So, yeah. All right. But she was in Sweet Blue Flowers, so she has a history of voicing a gay woman. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. She was also in Monthly Girls Nozaki-kun as... the prince character. The prince girl.
She's good.
Yeah.
She's good.
One day I'll pitch that show, just because it's unfinished and there'll never be any more of it, but it's had a great little run.
Virtually impossible that there will ever be any more. Yeah. I forgot that the ending of Nozaki is actually pretty good, despite being like a complete thing where she like leans over and confesses her love, and it's because the fireworks he can't hear her.
It's really good.
Yeah. And as I say, that totally felt right while also time being completely and utterly maddening.
Yeah.
Like, God damn it.
Okay. Maybe I should pitch Nozaki. Oh well, no, we can't retcon it.
One of us. Maybe I'll pitch it to you, or you'll pitch it to me. Because one of us will be picking.
Yes, one of us will be a winner. You may already be a winner. Got some great mid-roll here. Good luck, editor. And we're back. As promised, here are our pitches for our next episode's Spotlight anime. Duncan, Age Before Beauty.
Oh.
That's really mean. I'm sorry. I don't know why I said that.
That's proper mean.
Sorry.
You're not forgiven, Ben. You'll never be forgiven.
Duncan, may the best man win. May the best man win. That's what I actually meant.
Okay. So, John. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you why you should watch On High School Host Club.
Oh, okay.
Because I know both you guys know this one, but for our listeners who aren't so familiar, On is a parody of the reverse harem shoujo. It takes place in the titular On private school and follows the relationship between extremely reluctant heroine Haruhi and the members of the titular host club, which is basically a venue where the girls of the academy can, for a fee, enjoy the attention from a group of the most famous and elite students, which is so far so sojo. But where it actually gets good is that the very moment we meet Haruhi, she doesn't fit the mold we expect for a protagonist in that sort of thing. She's not a shrinking violet who blushes at the slightest glance or an angry tsundere. Frankly, she just wants to be left alone to study. But instead, she's caught up with this bunch of idiots who are fairly nice idiots, and that's worth saying. They are nice people, but they are fundamentally a bunch of idiots who seem to be so stuck into the roles they're playing for their clients, they forgot what they actually are. And you can't but help sort of emphasize for her any time one of the club pulls their bullshit, because she has this look of such deep and utter resigned frustration at their idiocy. And it's just done really well. It's funny, and there's a surprising warmth to it that it could easily have been mean like some people. It could have easily...
Sorry. I already apologized. Damn. Wasn't that enough?
No, oh. Never. But yeah, it could easily have been mean, because you're taking the mick out of these cliches and tropes, but instead she has empathy for them, and you get to see like their insecurities and the roots of these weird friendships between people you would normally never expect to get on with each other. And frankly, you also get Renge, who, the original OG Sam, who just comes rising like a glorious phoenix up from the floor, laughing all the way to basically be our little avatar within the series, just geeking out like the audience does and making sure you understand every trope which is being played with.
So
but yeah, that's why
I am livid
watch
that
it.
You did not say OG Ojo.
Oh man,
I know.
Cool, that's your pitch.
Yeah, that's my pitch.
It's rad.
Deal
good
with
pitch.
It.
Rad. It's a good show. How long is it though? Isn't it like too cool?
So my pitch is for the first arc. Okay. Okay. I think it's not complete within those 13 episodes, but you get enough from episode to episode to make it wholly enjoyable and for you to get what you need out of it. Because it doesn't complete the arc of the manga within the series anyway, so I don't think there's any black mark against it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people can watch, we can say, watch the 13, and if you want to go beyond that, you're fine.
I agree. I think it would be good as if we were to do this, and if you were not to pick my excellent suggestion, John, it would be a good test pilot for doing longer series of spotlights, because I think that's something we've been wanting to do more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, here is my pitch. So Duncan was talking about idiots. I'm thinking of a particular idiot, John.
Mm-hmm.
Hotori has a problem. She really wants to be a detective someday. Unfortunately, she is not very bright. She can barely hold down a job in a maid cafe, which granted is not a very good maid cafe. She has a crush and or a rivalry with her math teacher, who is obsessed with how useless she is. And as she works out this boring slice of life, small town experience, She occasionally brushes up against mysteries that are interesting or funny or weird. I'm talking about And Yet the Town Moves. This is, since I had a Shaft anime pitched to me, and unfortunately because of circumstances could not pick it, I really wanted to pick a minor Shaft. I thought about Arakawa Under the Bridge, but I honestly think that the first season's not that good, so it would be weird to pitch the second. I thought about Natsuno Arashi, but everyone knows that I really like that, and it would seem very self-indulgent. And I realized I hadn't seen And Yet the Town Moves since I bought it on Blu-ray several years ago. It's just a short 13-episode anime, and it came out right after Arakawa Under the Bridge and right before Madoka changed Shaft into this like huge bankrolling studio that would just make big. It's their last like even remotely arguably shoestring anime, and I think it is very weird and very funny, and it's kind of got sort of a pathetic coziness to it. I love Hotori's best friend. Her name escapes me because I didn't put her in. Oh, Tetsuno. Who is a good student, but is also like kind of creepily obsessed with maids, and also can't make the Spock sign with her hands, which is like Hotori's maid symbol. It's also the show that kind of like made me like get why maid moe was a thing, so that was fun. And now, in like the hindsight of Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, I think that like maid moe is less incomprehensible. But back in 2011. And Yet the Town Moves was kind of a weird one. And it's people have either love it or they haven't seen it. So I think maybe we could fix that.
Before John makes his decision, I'd just like to say we could just split the difference between me and Ben's pitches and just go for Maria Harlick instead. She's just like, it's like the exact halfway the two meet.
Man.
But didn't you not like Maria Harlick very much, ultimately?
No, I love it.
Okay.
I absolutely love it.
You fooled me really well then. Good job. I thought you were just going to go, yeah,
it's
fine.
Not good. It's really not good, but it's amazing. It's, yeah. That's
I would like to watch it someday so I can distinguish it from Triple X Holic in my head, which is, they're currently just completely overlapped. Yeah. This is the episode where Ben cannot tell anime apart.
Yeah. I'll pitch it someday to Andy because it is trash. But it's great trash.
Andy doesn't like old trash. He likes new, fresh, stinky trash. So
he does like to wallow, but he likes to check the temperature and the freshness of the trash before he dives in.
Oh, boy.
Has to be hot garbage, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I don't like that. Hello.
Take us away from here, then.
Yeah, okay. You picked two of my favorite shows, so I hate you both.
Boo fucking who.
Well, I don't know which one to pick. I know which one I'd pick if I was lazy. Definitely And Yet the Town Moves, because I have it on Blu-ray.
Well, I guess the question falls to you then, John. Are you lazy? Or are you dancer?
Well, I mean, if I'm not lazy, then it gets really hard to pick, because I like both of them. I've also been intending to pitch both of them, like, pretty soon. So, that sucks. I'm gonna go with Annie at the Town Moves.
Cool.
Cool.
The Ben John.
Oh fuck!
Domination
returned. I made a mistake.
And not only that, if it had been pitched yesterday, you wouldn't have got this one, John.
Oh really?
Yeah, I changed it. I was gonna pitch Natsuno Arashi, and then I talked myself out of it.
Oh yeah, I definitely would have picked Elrond in that case.
Sorry. I shouldn't have told you, Ben. It made you up your game.
No, I wasn't lying with my pitch, even though that was a good narrative thing. I was like, Arakawa Under the Bridge, and I looked at all the episodes, and I'm like, oh, actually, the first season's not as good as the second season. It would be weird to pitch the second season. And then I was like, Natsuno Arashi, I'm like, I've been talking about that a lot, and John does not love it like I love it. And I realized, And Yet the Town Moves is the other, like, quote-unquote minor Shaft that I think is actually really good. So I have been trying and failing to hack into the Keyframes email account. And I think I'm going to admit defeat. So tune in next episode for reader mail. But in the meantime, rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Find us on Twitter, Keyframes Pod. Find us on Facebook, just search for Keyframes Podcast. Send us questions, which someone knows the password to this account, at keyframespodcast@gmail.com. And most of all, tell a friend. We'll be seeing you in 2 weeks, everybody. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.